Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
And I'm Adam Scott.
And we host a podcast called The Severance Podcast, where we used to break down every episode of the TV show Severance.
Severance isn't back just yet, but the podcast is.
Each week, we'll discuss the movies, TV shows, and ideas that influence the making of Severance.
We're going to talk to the incredible artists who inspire us to do what we do.
The Severance Podcast returns Thursday, June 26. Follow and listen everywhere you get your podcasts.
All right, nice long segment coming up here. We got a lot to get to. ESPN has dropped their list. The top 10 wide receivers has just come out. We'll get to that shortly here in just a few minutes. But Will Anderson Jr. was on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Ross, friend of the show. I anticipate we'll be talking to him when the regular season comes up. We did Tuesdays with him last year. He's great. Will Anderson, we know how everybody feels about him. He's great as well. So this was two great men sitting down and chatting with each other. Will Anderson Jr. backed up Seth Payne on something he said earlier this week. And it was a very important thing, especially for those of you out there who are trying to lose weight or just sort of like maybe, hey, I dropped 15 pounds. I'm feeling a certain kind of way. And you look down at the scale and it's only 4 extra pounds on you, but you feel that, you know? And you said this. You said I found this fascinating. You said when you were playing at like 315, if you got down to like 310, you could totally tell the difference.
I could tell you, I felt the difference.
Yeah.
It might seem like it's no big deal. You know, I mean, I could gain 10 pounds in a day, but as far as, first thing in the morning, stepping onto the scale, like whatever your true weight is. Yeah.
Like you,
I could feel the difference.
The smallest amount of pounds, you can feel it. I immediately thought of you when Ross Tucker, this is like his first question, like, so what are you weighing these days? That kind of thing. This was Will Anderson's answer to that.
What are you weighing right now?
I'm at 253. I want to stay right here.
That's what you like?
I just want to stay right here at 253.
Why 253?
Because I got the 260, and I was almost up to 270 at like one point, like early in the season, because I had missed the whole training camp or whatever like that. And I was like, I don't feel good at all.
No.
And I feel way lighter, faster, quicker, more explosive at this weight right here.
Yeah.
270 is a big difference.
He almost got up to 270.
I'm having a hard time visualizing that.
Well, remember, when he showed up at camp, it wasn't like he had put on bad weight. He looked yoked.
Yeah.
And that was when he was about 260. And then it sounds like he was probably still just couldn't practice, was working out during training camp. Man, they give you good food during training camp. And he started to get up close to 270. 270, I would have told you last year, even when he looked good, I was like, I don't know about 270.
For him,
maybe 265.
Yeah.
There is a lot of, that's one of the things you kind of got to experiment with in your first couple years. And then it kind of, depending on when your scheme changes and everything or how you're being used, you can tweak it up or down based on how your team is using you and how you feel. But it sounds and feels right for him. The 253, I like that he said 253 because it's not 250,
no.
It's not 258, it's very specifically 253. And he feels comfortable and is... Remember, sometimes with Will, the regular season stats don't tell the whole story because he really poured it on in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that Chiefs game, I mean, he was all over the place in the Chiefs game.
This is going to be a fun season to watch Will Anderson, man. I have a feeling it's going to be a breakout for him. And he was great last year, to your point. He's double-digit sacks last year, and he missed a few games. You know?
The other thing, guys, like Will works hard. You know, you don't have to worry. It's not like he gained weight because he got fat or something. The tempting thing before the season begins is it feels so good because you're so much stronger. You gain 10 pounds and it's just every time you go in the weight room, you get a little bit stronger.
Yeah.
And you're on a little bit of that excess calorie high as well. It's just you're fat and happy, even though you're not actually fat. But once you get into, you play 60 snaps at full speed, you realize, oh, I felt fast in drills and none of my times went down. But this is different.
Yeah.
I felt just as fast. The stopwatch said I was just as fast, but I'm not. I'm not. I'm slow and sluggish.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yes, 270. It's like, man, getting up to 270 for Will Anderson.
Had him at three technique.
This I know, dude. And he'd do it, too.
That's what I was. I wanted JJ in his last couple of years, instead of trying to slim down.
Bulk up.
Get up to like 330 and be a nose tackle. Yeah.
How much could he weigh, do you think?
He could weigh 345
easily. Easy, huh?
Yeah, I think I always looked at him as a guy that if he had been an offensive lineman in high school or in college, that he could hold I don't think he would want to. He'd be one of those more svelte offensive tackles, but I think he could hold 320 and still look really lean by offensive line standards.
What a beast. This was good. This was Ross Tucker and Will Anderson. If you recall that Kansas City playoff game, Kansas City got the benefit of a couple of very sketchy calls on plays where players brushed up against Patrick Mahomes.
So the Will Anderson hit, he got flagged for hitting Pat Mahomes in the helmet.
Yeah.
Supposedly. Allegedly.
Yep.
And you couldn't really, it looked, when we were watching, it looked like there was no actual helmet-to-helmet contact, but they didn't have a really good angle that showed conclusively there was no helmet-to-helmet contact. I was really glad that Ross had this conversation with him.
Talk to me about the play where your guy Mahomes, I don't even know if you touched him or not. Dude, he snapped his head back like he got whiplash in a car accident going 70 miles an hour. I mean, you had to be so frustrated.
Yeah, I was, but, you know.
Did you get him at all, Will?
No, I didn't. I hit his chest. But, you know, I just got to be better. You know, me and my coach talked about it or whatever like that. Like, we got to be better just, like, when it comes to, like, how you hit the quarterback and, you know, we got to drill it more and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and
but
just,
you didn't hit him in the head.
Yeah,
you hit him where you're supposed to.
Got
to
be perfect in the playoffs. You got to be perfect in the playoffs.
I think it's because you didn't go low at all.
Yeah, and that's why we got to go lower.
It looked like you were face-to-face.
Yeah, too diplomatic on my for my part. Too diplomatic on Will Anderson's part.
Yeah, look, at first in the video, when Ross first says it looks like he didn't get it hit in the head or something like that, Will puts his arms out to the side.
Yeah,
like yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
but he reeled it back in because he knows he doesn't want to create any clickbait or anything. They ended up having a good conversation, and Ross, to his credit, brought up, well, yeah, you can say you want to try to hit him in the midsection, but then later in the game, Mahomes is running around, and he just drops,
mm-hmm.
and who was it? It was Toa Toa and
one other line. I forget who the other one was. It was definitely Toa Toa.
The Texans defenders hit him, and trying to probably aim for the midsection. They don't want to hit him in the head, but because Mahomes doesn't even slide, he just drops. They end up getting flagged for that. So it feels like you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. The only thing and it's not fair, and yet it is what it is. And as a player and as a coach, you got to adjust to it. So when Will talks about how they're focusing on that and trying to, you know, have the right strategy for it, my best guess is that the strategy that's least likely to get you screwed is that if the quarterback is still in the pocket or behind the line of scrimmage relatively, that you try to hit him in the midsection because he's not going to slide there or anything necessarily. If he's outside the pocket and he's running past the line of scrimmage, you have to sacrifice all thoughts of any kind of an actual hit on the quarterback.
Yeah.
You got to just try to wrap him up and not even form tackle, almost just kind of lasso him down. Problem with that is you're going to get Josh Allen is going to fake a slide or something, but you got to almost conduct your, like, no part of your brain can be thinking, all right, I'm going to kill this guy because he's out of the pocket.
Right.
But you also got to take into account that he might fake slide. So you just got to go in with your head high and try to wrap him up and basically chest bump him. Well, it's so stupid.
Especially when it's Mahomes. He's the master of the fake slide, man. Like
Josh Allen, too. Well, Josh Allen's probably I think Josh Allen is like, because he's running at you like a freight train.
Yep.
And he uses that to his advantage. Mahomes doesn't quite have that same freight train feel
definitely
to
not.
When he's running.
No, definitely not.
It's bogus. I know. I get it. And yet, you've got to have a strategy for dealing with the bogusness.
Yes. Karma came back and bit Mahomes in the Super Bowl. I will say that. You know, it's if you're gonna do all this chicanery.
Eagles got away with it was Jalen Carter's hand to the face, right, on that.
I just meant them getting blown out in the Super Bowl, but yes, specifically.
But they also had that no call.
Yeah, they did.
When Jalen Carter just smacked him right in the face.
Good,
and,
good.
The officials apparently just forgot what they were supposed to do.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
And I'm Adam Scott.
And we host a podcast called The Severance Podcast, where we used to break down every episode of the TV show Severance.
Severance isn't back just yet, but the podcast is.
Each week, we'll discuss the movies, TV shows, and ideas that influence the making of Severance.
We're going to talk to the incredible artists who inspire us to do what we do.
The Severance Podcast returns Thursday, June 26th. Follow and listen everywhere you get your podcasts.
Texter, yeah. Glad Will didn't take the bait. They're coming for the Chiefs. I know. I am too. I just hate it.
Oh, I'll tell you what. Yeah. One thing that I really liked from the C.J. Gardner-Johnson interview was when C.J. Gardner-Johnson was talking about his time in Detroit and they were going to play Kansas City, and he was telling guys, like, don't be intimidated by that red.
Yeah.
You guys, you belong.
Yeah.
You get after them, and you just take it to them, and they ended up beating them in the regular season.
That's right. That was that opener on Thursday night. Yeah.
Yeah. I liked that part of it.
I did too. We'll have more C.J. Gardner-Johnson a little later in the show. Great interview on the Pivot Podcast. Last one with Ross Tucker and Will Anderson on the potential of this Texans defense.
Do you guys talk about the fact that with your corners and your edge guys, like, you guys have a chance to have, like, an all-time defense?
Most definitely.
I mean, you guys are elite at the positions where you want to be elite.
Most definitely. Yeah, we talk about that all the time with Sting and Kamari, and then, of course, me and Daniil, man, and we was like, bro, like, we just want to make y'all job easier. Like, we got y'all. Like, y'all boys do y'all. We're going to do us, man. We're going to have fun doing it. And it's special seeing both of those guys rock out.
You and I were talking during the break after the C.J. Gardner-Johnson audio we were playing. I'm like, this defense is a bunch of killers, man. Like, even the journeyman types are guys that are dogs on this defense.
Well, yeah, guys that are just they can inflict pain and damage,
yes,
at the very least.
Yeah.
I think the biggest difference, we were talking yesterday about Jared Verse, the defense, the edge rusher from the Rams,
mm-hmm,
and how he reminds me of Will Anderson in a lot of ways. Will Anderson's rookie year was a lot like Jared Verse's rookie year last year. And you asked me, okay, where do you think, because I'm very bullish on Jared Verse. I think he's going to be an awesome, awesome NFL player.
Yeah.
But you asked, who do I think finishes ahead of the other one in those, in that ESPN ranking that we've been going through?
Yeah.
I would say, even if they played exactly the same individually, Will Anderson ends up being ranked higher because he's got a better complementary situation. They've got a pass rush up front. You've got corners and defensive backs on the back end that they're just a more complete defense that gives you more opportunities for sacks. Just like Will and Daniil create opportunities for interceptions, those defensive backs also create sack opportunities because a quarterback has to hold on.
Yeah,
the ball
coverage
more.
Sacks, no doubt.
The three things really that the Texans defense needs to do if they really want to capitalize on that potential. One is just limit the big passing plays, the passing touchdowns.
Yeah, that's a big
one.
That's
a combination of mental errors and tackling.
Mm-hmm.
And the youth in the secondary last year. Two, just linebackers got to get better in pass coverage. And then three, this is the big one. I try to not make, like, when the Texans were a really good defense, but they allowed too many big plays, which ended up with them not being that great of a scoring defense.
Mm-hmm.
I try not to make excuses by saying that, well, the offense didn't really help him out a lot either. But that is an element to it.
Yeah.
Especially when you consider what happened in the second halves of games. The Texans' gap between their first half performance and second half performance offensively was atrocious.
It was obscene.
It was really bad.
Yeah.
And then the Detroit game was probably the perfect example where, defense comes up with an interception. Cool. Oh, CJ throws a pick. Hey, defense comes up with an interception. Oh, CJ throws a pick.
Yeah.
It was the dam's going to break at some point.
Yep.
So getting some complimentary play from the offense this year will make the defense that – they'll look statistically more like what they actually are.
For what it's worth, Gennaro Felice of NFL.com, conveniently enough, put together a piece yesterday on who he thinks the top 10 defenses are going to be. I'm hitting this now because we just got done with – Ross Tucker asking or bringing up to Will Anderson, hey, you guys could have an historic defense this year. We should point out that the Texans under D'Amico Ryans have finished 15th in scoring defense each of the first two seasons. So while there's plenty of sizzle reel you can put together for this defense for sure and all the swarming and everything else, at the end of the day, points allowed is the most important stat.
It's kind of a big deal.
It's kind of a big deal. And they've been
the offense plays a part in that, but it's on the defense in some of the big plays they've allowed.
Yeah,
too.
If you're getting as much praise coming into this coming season as the Texans defense is getting, we need to point out they've been middle of the pack in the number of points that they've allowed the first 2 years with D'Amico Ryans. Now, Felice has them as his fourth ranked defense coming into the year. And he lists all the players and the reasons why, and there's plenty of star power on this defense. But he points out that the weak spot might be the interior on the defensive line, even though that they were middle of the pack in terms of rushing yards allowed. You know, it wasn't a it wasn't a five-alarm fire, but you go up against a team like the Ravens, and they were just dicing the Texans on Christmas Day this past year.
Yeah, that well, the big part, when it comes to the rush defense, this is a big part of it. Because if you look at EPA per play and yards per carry and everything, the Texans were top five against the run.
Yeah.
This is one of the big problems, and this is where Christian Harris being hurt really hurt them last year, is that, like a lot of teams, they are in nickel a lot, the Texans' defenses. Five defensive backs, so you've only got two actual linebackers out there, and Jalen Petrie is playing one of your linebackers. But the Texans do that a lot, and they're really, really good at it, until they face teams that line up with heavy personnel, teams that have multiple tight ends, a fullback, all of just old-school smash-mouth football. That's where being out there with five defensive backs can really hurt you. And that, like, having three linebackers to be able to play your base 4-3 can get be a part of getting over that hump when it comes to your run defense. It's that's where I don't blame the defensive tackles in that situation. If you had a couple of, if you had T'Vondre Sweat and Jeffrey Simmons, then yeah, it's a lot easier to play against the run and nickel. But really, a lot of it at this point, the reason that they really struggle at times is they just don't have enough mass up there in the linebacking corps. So Christian Harris being healthy could help allay a lot of that.
It is interesting, though, because, you know, you lay that out. If they do have, if they go bulkier and have the three linebackers out there, they're taking Jalen Petrie off the field, probably.
Right.
And they really love
right.
Jalen Petrie.
Well, that's where it's a game plan by game plan thing.
Yeah.
They didn't have as much ability to be versatile this year with their defensive personnel group and with Christian Harris out.
Like, right.
It wasn't
even available to
Christian
them.
Christian Harris is out. Yeah. Hey, Henry Toa got better and played better. It was a bigger swing when they faced certain opponents because you didn't have three guys that you really liked out there.
Felice says Houston's ranked 15th in defensive points allowed each of the first two seasons of the Ryans era, but I think the group can crack the top five in 2025 thanks to improved depth, continued development, and a whole heap of havoc wreakers on the team.
Havoc wreakers.
Havoc wreakers, yeah. So.
The fun thing about the Texans is that their defense, they were in the top 3 to 5 of so many categories. Tackles for a loss, yards per play, they were top 3. Just all of these things that would indicate, wow, that's a dominating defense, except for some of those huge chunk plays.
Yeah.
And for a team that's as good as they are, there were just too many long touchdown passes. There's too many missed tackles. They just have to clean those things up. And I hesitate to just act like that's some simple thing, because it's lots of teams could say the same thing. You know, like, well, if we just clean this up, if we just clean that up. But they did some really impressive things last year when it came to creating takeaways, the tackles behind the line of scrimmage, just sacks in general. That it's just, you've just got to be more consistent with it, and then you've got the complete deal.
That's the thing. I think that's the reason why you're totally right. Like, it's just saying to go do that makes it sound like, well, that's easy, just go do this. But they've got the guys to go do it. It's one thing if you've got a defense and you're like, boy, we need to take that next step. Well, what do you need? Well, we need a dude here, and we need a dude here, and we need a couple dudes here. They've got the dudes. It's the dudes need to do better things, you know? Like, they've got the guys. So, by the way, the three defenses ahead of the Texans on this ranking, purely subjective power ranking from a writer on NFL.com, Baltimore number 3, Philly number 2, Denver Broncos number 1. Two of those three teams the Texans play this year, Baltimore and Denver. The Denver Broncos, according to this guy, best defense in the NFL.
I know the gamblers really like the yards per play, right?
Yes.
For
very
defenses.
Much so, yes.
Yeah, Texans were 4th last year in yards per play.
Yeah, yeah. The gamblers would back this defense and hope that big plays are these outliers that just you're going to eventually stop giving them up. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Good to be with you. All right, Seth, I mentioned it earlier. The top 10 list is up on ESPN.com for wide receivers. It's winding down. We've only got one day left of this. Tomorrow is cornerbacks, and I would imagine, well, I can assure you there will be Texans representation on that list. ESPN, for those who've been on vacation, ESPN does this this time of year, 11 days, 11 different position groups. They've asked 70 executives, coaches, and scouts in the NFL to put their top 10 together at each position group. And they tabulate the votes, and they come up with a combined top 10. They give a few honorable mentions. They list everybody who received votes. And they drop a different position group each day. The Texans that have been ranked thus far, not honorable mentions, but the ones that have cracked the top 10 at their positions have been Joe Mixon, number 9 at running back, Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter, numbers 8 and 9 respectively at edge defender. We had CJ. No, CJ actually didn't crack the top 10. I think that's the only ones that have cracked the top 10 so far for the Texans. Several honorable mentions and also receiving votes. But only 3 have cracked the top 10 so far. So, Seth, wide receiver, you have not looked at this yet.
I've not looked at this. I'm right now looking at the NFL receiving leaderboard from last year. Okay. That's the list I'm looking at. And I'm going to try to figure out, A, whether Nico Collins was in the top 10. And B, I want everybody to know, before you get overly angry about wherever Nico Collins does land on this list, as long as he lands in the top 10, I think you should be happy, given that he was 22nd in receiving last year. So the
he missed 5 games. Yeah.
Right. No, I know. But I'm just saying, like, just for perception. Keeping it, before you get all disgruntled or whatever, there are a lot of guys that had a lot more receiving yards than him last year. So, and he hasn't been able to stay healthy for an entire season.
He hasn't. And I'll say this, just I've looked at this, obviously. I'm looking at it right now. And I'm looking at the honorable mentions.
That includes tight ends, by the way. So, so 20.
Oh, your receiving yards. Yeah.
There's like 3 or 4 tight ends.
Right. Yeah. The point remains. There's several honorable mentions on here. There's a ton of guys who receive votes. This is the most stacked position in all of football right now. Yeah. The receiver position. All right.
Okay. This is me trying to get into the heads. And personally, I think if Nico stays healthy, he'll be top 3 this year. But big if. So these are the guys that are above him last year in terms of receiving yardage that I think are above him on this list. I'm going to count them on my fingers to see if I get to. I think Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson would be.
Okay.
I don't. Brian Thomas was 3rd in receiving last year. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's above Nico yet.
Okay.
I'll put Amon-Ra St. Brown. Okay. I'm skipping some names here. Malik Nabers is an interesting one.
It is.
They really force-fed him the ball.
It is interesting.
He was a 7th leading receiver last year. Yeah. I don't think Malik Nabers is above him. Okay. I think CeeDee Lamb is above him.
Okay.
I don't think Ladd McConkey is above him. Jackson Smith and Jigba, no. Garrett Wilson, no. AJ Brown, and where's Ty? Oh, Tyreek Hill's got it. He wasn't on the list, obviously, but I think Tyreek Hill would be above him. And I'm going to skip 7. I think he's 7.
7. Okay. Let's count down the list here.
I think Nico is 7.
I think he's 7. Okay. I love your process. I'm going to tell you this right now. Your process was very good in doing this.
Was it?
Very good. Very good. Yes. Ja'Marr Chase is number 1. And I think that's, and his, the lowest anybody ranked him was 3. Mm-hmm. Justin Jefferson, number 2. The lowest
that
anybody
tracks.
Ranked him was 4. Yeah. Tyreek Hill was 3 on this list.
Yeah.
You know, even though not as big a year last year, but he's still.
Yeah, I said that in a confusing way for people listening because they're not looking at this list. I was talking about Tyreek Hill not on the receiver and leaders list, obviously.
Yeah. He was.
But in this list of execs ranking.
Subjective. Yeah. He's 3rd.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
And I'm Adam Scott.
The Severance Podcast is back on Thursday, June 26th. Follow and listen everywhere you get your podcasts.
CeeDee Lamb is 4. You said he would be ahead of Nico Collins. AJ Brown is 5. I think
I named him, right?
You did. Yeah. You absolutely did. Yeah. Amon-Ra St. Brown is 6.
I named him.
You named him.
Okay.
All right. So you said Nico Collins.
And then
Collins,
I said, I think Nico's there. Yeah.
You said Nico's 7. All right. Are you ready?
It feels high based on this process.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Number 7. Malik Nabers.
Number 7. I like Malik Nabers, but all right, fine.
Highest.
Okay, you know what? I'm disgruntled.
Why are you disgruntled? Hit
1,200 yards.
Yep.
He played all 17 games.
Yeah.
But it was a crappy offense, and they force-fed him the ball.
He had bad quarterbacks, though. You know, They did force-feed him. 171 targets. Second only behind Ja'Marr Chase. God, the LSU guys, man. The LSU receivers coming out. Like, Brian Thomas is the black sheep out of all of them. And he's awesome. Holy crap. So, Malik Nabers, 7.
Okay. All right, now the big question is, all right, if Oh, boy. Okay, they wouldn't. Don't tell me if Nico is number eight or not.
Okay, I won't.
Jackson Smith and Jigba. No, not Jackson. Amon-Ra St. Brown. I messed up my hyphenations.
He's already ahead of him.
I wondered if Amon-Ra St. Brown was ahead of him.
He was. I'd said he's number six.
Oh, you already said him.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Yeah,
never
yeah.
mind.
He's six.
Boy, I am out of it.
He's six.
Okay.
You want me to go ahead and unveil number eight here?
Yeah.
Okay. Nico Collins, Houston Texans.
Oh,
I'm going to give you a ding.
Okay.
I'm going to give you a ding. If you're within one, that's a ding right there. Especially because Nico's a tough one. As you went through the process of doing it on the air, it's a tough one to get your arms around because he missed so many games last year. People forget that he was, when he went out injured in that Buffalo game, first of all, he went out in the first quarter and he already had almost 100 yards receiving on one play in that game. He was on pace for a 2,000-yard season when he went out in that Buffalo game. It took the league an extra week to overtake Nico Collins for receiving yards when he went on the injured list. They got, after week five, he was leading the league in receiving. If I recall correctly, after week six, he was still leading the league in receiving.
Yeah, and that was after only playing one quarter of the Bills game.
Yes, yeah,
that.
He played four and a quarter games.
Extra, including, if he had played, if I broke it down by quarters, this would be even a healthier projection.
Yeah.
But if he could just freaking stay healthy.
Stay healthy.
He was on pace for a 1,425-yard season.
Yeah.
You know, he would have been the third receiver in the NFL last year. It's as simple as that.
When he got hurt, he was on pace for like 2,000 yards. He had over 100 like the first four games of the year.
Well, going into that, right, but after that game, after that game, he would have been on pace for 1,425 yards.
I mean, it took the league another week to overtake him in the rankings. I don't know how many he had after five games, but he was on fire. He was like crazy numbers.
Oh no, I'm sorry. You're 100% right.
Yeah.
I was taking his 12 games and prorating it.
Yeah.
No, you're exactly right. He was on pace for way more at the
after
time,
five
right?
games. Yeah.
Yeah,
he slowed down after he got back, but that was I give him a pass. Like I give CJ a pass. Like Nico's numbers coming back to earth a little bit after he came back has more to do with what was going on around him and the play calling. This is what they say about him, Seth. NFL personnel director said, quote, rare ability to be a legit number one wide receiver. Good balance. Good balance is a great one. He has tremendous. He delivers blows, man. Good balance, skill set, size, speed, agility for his size. Very good hands, competes. All those things.
Did we identify? So I had him ranked seventh and he ended up being ranked eighth. Who was the person that I missed? Was it A.J. Brown?
Well, no, Malik Nabers you thought would be behind him. And,
okay.
And Malik Nabers was seventh. The first six had ahead of him.
God, you've explained that to me, my own mental process, three times. So thank you. Thank
You're
you.
You're welcome. You're
all
welcome.
Right, good.
Yeah, he's eighth is about where I would have guessed just because the injuries have to factor in. And to your point, like just the numbers, the pure counting numbers don't pop because he misses so many games. Eighth feels about right. Now, if you just take out the injuries and you go, man, all these guys are healthy, and I'll assume health for all these guys for the entire season, I think Nico's a top four guy. Right now, I would put him ahead of a declining Tyreek Hill, and I'd put him ahead of CeeDee Lamb right now.
If you look at just where Nico is on the total receiving yardage, he had 1,006 yards receiving.
Yeah.
There only are, I think, two guys on here who had fewer targets than him.
Yeah.
So in terms of just doing the most with the fewest number of targets, and, you know, both those guys, it was A.J. Brown had one less target than him, and Calvin Ridley had one less target but played 17 games.
I love this comment from an NFL offensive coach on Nico Collins. Because I was thinking about this morning when I knew we were going to do this as a topic. Quote, he was once just a jump ball guy, but once he started taking quick throws for big gains with his size and athleticism, that changed his game. Those slant routes that he runs where they're giving him a big cushion and he just takes the easy money slant and he runs over three guys after he catches the ball are delightful to watch as a Texan fan.
And a lot of times, you know, that was one of the things that defenses adjusted to a little bit last year is, there's times where he doesn't even need a huge window. CJ will CJ will start his throw in motion before Nico has even cleared that middle level defender. And they just, it's almost like it just happens automatically.
Yeah.
And it wasn't as automatic last year. It was the classic, man, all right, team saw how devastating you were with that last year. And we know exactly where the weak spots are going to be if we allow them to do that. And when it comes to, hey, Bobby Slowick making adjustments to the adjustments, they just didn't do a good enough job with that last year.
Here's the other thing about the Nico Collins thing, him being eighth on this top 10. Ja'Marr Chase makes $40 million a year. I'm going to go down the list. Justin Jefferson, 35, I think. Tyreek Hill, over 30. CeeDee Lamb, 34, 35. A.J. Brown just got an extension. He's making well over 30. Amon-Ra St. Brown makes $30 million a year. Malik Nabers is on his rookie contract. Nico Collins makes $24 million a year, and he's in that class with those guys. Even the guys just behind him, Seth, real quick, Mike Evans, who's in his 30s, he's 31 years old, makes more than Nico Collins does right now. He makes 26 a year. Garrett Wilson just signed for 31. He's 10th on this list.
Can I tell you something?
Terry McLaurin's honorable mention, and he's mad he's not making $30 million
right
now.
Okay, you know who's having the exact opposite conversation about this? Dolphins fans. Because, hey, I put Tyreek Hill above Nico, even though Tyreek Hill only had 959 yards receiving last year. Tyreek Hill played all 17 games.
Mm-hmm.
The Dolphins have paid their quarterback.
Yeah.
They have a whiz kid, offensive-minded head coach.
Yeah.
And Tyreek Hill, playing all 17 games, had 959 yards, and yet still is ranked third on this list by anonymous executives and coaches, because it's not like Tyreek Hill all of a sudden sucks as an offensive coordinator.
No, it's a bad look, man.
What are you doing, Miami Dolphins? What? Where are you going? What are you doing?
Bad look.
What a mess. I can't. Honestly, next time Tyreek Hill has some kind of outburst about wanting to get traded, I'm going to support him.
Yeah.
I'm going to support him in that.
Tyreek Hill.
Yes. I'm going to say, you know what? Tyreek Hill's never done nothing to nobody.
No.
Hey, he's just a guy that just wants to play football.
That's right.
Every now and then, rough up a dock worker. That's it. That's all he wants to do. And you guys are just, you're clipping his wings, man.
I love that you called the guy a dock worker. Wasn't he like the steward of like a luxury boat or something?
A charter,
It'd be more impressive if he rushed off a dock worker.
Actually, like, that's true, right?
Dock workers feel like they got a little something for you.
Yeah.
That's funny.
He's a guy who works on a dock, okay?
Yes, he was standing.
He's technically a dock worker.
At that point in time, he was standing on a dock, all right?
It's kind of the opposite of how I called. Oh no, it's the same as I used to call Brock Osweiler's parents carnies, because they work with like the livestock show.
He did the rodeo.
They're carnies.
Yeah,
they're part of event coordinators or whatever for some of these big events.
Yeah, man, I don't know their dental or meth situation, but they're carnies. That's what they are. By the way, Brian Thomas Jr. honorable mention on this, which goes to show you, like Seth. This is how stacked the wide receiver position is in the NFL. Like some of these positions, it felt like they were struggling to fill a real top 10, you know? Like the off ball.
It also cheeses me a little bit that Brian Thomas Jr. is relatively under-discussed and had a hell of an impressive year last year. But because he plays in the AFC South, it doesn't matter.
No.
It just flat out doesn't matter. Yeah, look, Travis Hunter is very intriguing, and if he develops as a wide receiver, that'll be scary, but I am far more concerned about Brian Thomas Jr. as a receiving threat right now.
Absolutely. Yeah, this goes to show you just how impressive it is that Nico Collins has ascended to where he has in just 2 years, and I'm saying, I know he's been in the league 4 years. I'm saying 2 years with a real team. These are the honorable mentions. Terry McLaurin, Puka Nacua, Brian Thomas Jr., DK Metcalf, T. Higgins, and Devontae Adams.
Yeah.
That's 11 through 16 of this list are those guys. Like that. Those are, Nacua and Brian Thomas Jr. are both young players, but Metcalf, McLaurin, Adams especially. I mean, Adams was probably top five for several of these. Like, these are all guys who, like, if any of these guys were in the top 10, I wouldn't blink an eye. You know?
Speaking of Devontae Adams, that's another fun match. This Rams game has so many fun elements to it. For those of you who don't know, Devontae Adams now with the Rams.
Yeah.
And you'll recall that even though things didn't work out with him for him with the Jets the way they had hoped, it did when the Jets played the Texans. So
yeah, for him particularly,
that,
yeah.
That goes back to, you know, C.J. Gardner-Johnson has played in the slot before, and if you want both him and Petrie out on the field at the same time, there's times where you might really – you might prefer to have Jalen go back and play safety and C.J. Gardner-Johnson come up in the slot. There's more options, and especially if Jalen Smith can come along and be available to your rookie year. Like, hopefully you can not end up in those bad matchup situations like you had versus Devontae Adams and the Jets.
Yeah, that's a big deal, man. That opener is going to be fun. Text message. Nico also had the misfortune of playing with Laremy Tunsil. Those damn penalty yards, LOL. Now, I know you're being tongue-in-cheek. Nico did have a 77-yard touchdown called back, his very first snap back from the injured list because Tunsil was illegally downfield.
Yeah, I don't think that guy's being tongue-in-cheek. I think that's fair.
Oh,
like, that play especially,
that 77-yard
play called back because Laremy couldn't be bothered to stay near the line of scrimmage.
Yeah. So that's definitely a thing. So Nico Collins.
Hey, no, but it doesn't matter, Sean. I don't, remember, the penalties are overrated. It doesn't actually hurt the team all that much.
It's 19 penalties.
I'm told that as long as your PFF pass protection grade is good, then it doesn't matter if you get a 77-yard touchdown.
Go straight to pass, football hell.
Called back. Yeah.
Get out of here. And I'm not saying that to you. I'm saying that to the people you're quoting right now. So all we have left is cornerback tomorrow. What, Stingley top three at corner? What's your early prediction on Stingley for tomorrow's cornerback top 10?
I think he's definitely top three. I'm trying to think of...
The top four in some order will be Patrick Surtain, defending defensive player of the year.
Yeah.
Stingley, Sauce, McDuffie. Those will be the top four.
I think he's above Sauce Gardner and then above McDuffie. So I think I think Surtain gets number one by anonymous executives and scouts and everything. I think with Stingley, you have to remember, just like it is with Nico, the injury history matters, and like the number of scouts and everybody else that's actually seen Derek Stingley play at the level that he's playing at right now is not as many as there have been for Surtain or other guys, because you've had 1.5 seasons now, really, of Derek Stingley playing like this all-pro caliber player.
I'm more intrigued by what kind of love Kamari Lassiter gets. Kalen Bullock making honorable mention for safeties kind of got me, like by proxy, got me excited about, look, I wonder if these executives and scouts are looking at Kamari Lassiter. Lassiter, I think he had a better year than Kalen Bullock did. Lassiter did as a player. So I'm curious. I don't think Lassiter will crack the top 10, but I could see him, like Bullock, being honorable mention on this thing.
I would take with Stingley, or getting votes or whatever it might
be. Yeah, for sure getting votes.
Some of the people that grade the defensive back performances is PFF, obviously, is one of them. The past year and a half, to illustrate my point, he's been the best in the league amongst all cornerbacks. The problem is the guys like McDuffie and Surtain and Sauce Gardner aren't that far behind them, and they've had a bigger track record of it. So there's still, I think that with Stingley, he is what he is right now, and I think he's top two cornerbacks in the NFL. But if you're looking at it over the last 3 or 4 years, you got to factor some of that into
it. He'll be two. I think that's what you just said too for your prediction. I think he'll be two. I think Surtain will be one and Stingley will be two, if I had to guess. All right, top of the hour, we'll circle back to C.J. Gardner-Johnson. He was on the Pivot podcast, answered the question, why are you no longer an Eagle? You really start to dig into the psyche of C.J. Gardner-Johnson when you hear some of the answers to his question, to the questions about the narrative surrounding him. But up next, Matt Kawahara had a long article yesterday about something I had completely forgotten about, the Battle of the Billionaires taking place in a courtroom next week. Jim Crane, Drayton McClain, who do you got? We'll tell you what it's all about coming up next.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
And I'm Adam Scott.
The Severance Podcast is back on Thursday, June 26th.
Each week, we talk about the movies and TV shows that influence Severance with the artists who make them.
Follow and listen everywhere you get your podcasts.